by US aerial bombardment of their house, the following people, 12 years of age, Dina Hamidi, 14 years of age, Masab Hamidi, 15 years of age, Dan Hamidi, 19 years of age, Zanabar Hamidi, 11 years of age, Hassan Hamidi, 19 months old, still by US bombing, Amman Saab, 6 months of age, still by US bombing, Noor Saab. Razak Alani. Dying of fright after US soldiers put bag over his head, 70 years of age, Madil Al-Jamal.
What's the crack with you?
That was good, yeah, a lot of attention, a lot of people rolling down their windows, you know. It's pretty good. The harp is great, huh?
Can you tell what it says on the, can you say just some recording?
Columbus Day, 500 years of genocide. Okay. Should have a little plus in there, but 500 plus years.
So you know? Just to tell people that you're actually wearing an orange jumpsuit at the moment.
Yeah, the significance of it, especially with Ken Bigley, is so fucking... It's an interesting thing with Bigley. Why was there so much about him, like, you know? Yeah. Thank you. Yep. Why was, you know, why this one person, was it?
Well, yeah. Like, that's the way the media works, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess Nick Bird got a lot of that attention as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
But okay, there's before we do that, we're just going to start with a ritual that's... Ewan Dunlop is part of our Crouchers community, and like a good Native American, it's terrible. And this is our sage, and it's very intertribal. It's not specific to any tribe in North America. And it's actually not a, so much a purification ritual, but a celebratory thing. So what you basically do is trying to keep the lights problem. So you might have to keep lighting it. And... we salute the four directions. Which way is north?
That way.
So, kind of salute.
So they're just about to practice Native American ritual now to underline the colonial nature, imperial nature, I suppose, of the conquest of America to begin with.
North and south, and then east, and then west. As the smoke comes up, you kind of bring it up your body here and then over each shoulder.
So there's a beautiful smell of burning sage coming from there.
It smells a little like grass, doesn't it?
It's sort of... it's interacting with the burning smell of fossil fuels all around us.
What do you do with it?
North, so, south, east and west. And
yeah,
purify yourself east, with it.
No, just over yourself.
Just over yourself.
Blow on it because it's going out.
Shoulder.
The advantage Haiti has is something like 7 to 8 million people cramped into an area the size of Munster. There is a lot of land, of course, vacant up in the valleys, up in the north and mid-east, but quite a few people are based down in the southwest in Port-au-Prince, or up in Gonaïves in the midwest as well, where most of the riots have occurred recently due to the flooding and due to 3,000 people being killed up there. So basically, I still have a couple of friends and good contacts over in Haiti. It's a terrible situation over there. You have 78 million people in the size of Munster. You have 80 to 90% unemployment and a serious amount of people starving to death, of course, as well. But so today, I guess we're just remembering them in our prayers and, you know, let them not be forgotten. I do believe that 500 million in aid has been allocated by the UN since 1999-2000, but because of the re-election of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, they have the French and the United States actually withheld that and vetoed the aid going in. That could be an advantage because it probably would have been just wasted on motorways and palaces for his own people. But at the moment there is a serious crisis there, and unfortunately we only hear about it when 3,000 people die during natural flooding, but there are many, many thousands of people dying there every year that we need to try and remember as well. So I call into the circle here Sister Helen Ryder and Kieran Rigney and all the orphanages that they're taking care of. up in the hillsides outside Port-au-Prince. I also remember the Sisters of the Santa Union working up in Gonaï for the rites have taken place. I remember the 200 to 300 children that walked 5 miles every day just to receive a bowl of rice in their school. They basically have tablet and chalk to write on. They have no shoes. And then the kids that come in the afternoon, whose families are doing a little bit better, who are able to afford pen and paper and uniform. So we remember them today. Thanks.
I was just thinking there as we gathered together about the Choctaw people of Oklahoma, also victims of the so-called discoverers of the New World. And I just want to briefly retell the story about the Choctaw to remember them today. In 1832, the Choctaw were forcibly removed from their homeland in Mississippi, and they were forced to walk a 600-mile walk to Oklahoma. They called that walk in 1832 the Trail of Tears. It was a walk on which half their nation died from exposure and cold, and it was in the winter of the year that it took place, so it was an extremely difficult time. But they walked that journey, half them died on the way. And how we in Africa came in contact with the Choctaw was that we discovered that in 1847, some 16 years later, the Choctaw, who had gone through this Trail of Tears themselves, heard about the famine in Ireland, and they raised a sum of money, $170, and sent it in aid to support the people of Ireland during the famine. So it was an extraordinary generous action, and in 1992 we invited the Choctaw to Ireland to lead the famine walk in the west of Ireland as a way of remembering their generosity during their own suffering when they remembered the people of Ireland. So we invited them and they led the walk, and we commemorated Columbus's arrival in the Americas during that famine walk. So I just want to recall the Choctaw people today and all the indigenous people who have died, many indeed who have died at the hands of Irish people of Irish descent. There was a famous Irish general called General Philip Sheridan, who left Cavan, a place called Killincare in County Cavan, during the famine, and he joined the ranks of the US military. He rose to the rank of officer commanding, and he took a particular cause in killing the Plains Indians. He is the one who made the famous statement that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. So again, in 1992, we invited a representative of the Oglala people to come to Killincare in County Cavan and to plant a tree at the birthplace of Philip Sheridan, and there she offered forgiveness and was asked forgiveness by the descendants of General Sheridan now living in Cavan. So a moment of healing and reconciliation took place there in 1992 on the 500th anniversary. So just to remember all the indigenous people who have died, and indeed Ireland's role in the genocide of the indigenous people of the Americas.
I lived in Canada for a year, and I've seen Canadian Indians reduced to living on the streets of a city, and landless, and victims of drink, which was introduced to them by us so-called white people. So the main reason I'm here really is, sorry I'm meandering, the main reason I'm here is that my outrage at the fact that the American military have the freedom of our airport in Shannon, and there's all sorts of illegal weaponry going through there. There's 10,000 soldiers a month on average going through on their way to and from Iraq and Afghanistan. And I feel we are complicit and the killing in those countries, and I'm here more or less to repent for my part as an Irish citizen in that killing, because my government is complicit.
Robbie, you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Robbie, and again, I think sometimes you sort of despair, because it seems to be a very big challenge to try to overcome these corporate powers that be, and the corporate politics that goes on. But at the same time, something has to be done. The world is at stake, and the environment is at stake, and it's one thing to remember all the dead that have resulted from our arrogance and from imperialism and from greed. But it's also something else to keep that hope alive, that things can be better, and another world is possible, to coin a phrase. And it can happen, it has to happen, because it's either change or nothing.
Robbie has a radio programme on Thursday. What time, Robbie?
Majority World goes out at 4:30, and it's everybody's programme. It's not my programme. It's it's a programme about social justice and global issues, and it's good crack, apart from anything else.
I'm Sheila. I'm as outraged as I think any one of you probably. I think I sing a little song. Someone's praying low, come by here. Someone's praying, my Lord, come by here. Someone is praying, my Lord, come by here. Oh Lord, come by here. Can you hear us praying, Lord? Come by here. Can you hear us praying, my Lord? Come by here. Can you hear us praying, Lord? Come by here. Oh Lord, come by here. Thank you very much.
I'm Elaine. I can't follow that. So I didn't know quote. Somebody mentioned hope. A man who has help has hope, and a man who has hope has everything.
Give it another little blast. Ellie and Moises and I went to the Latin American night the other night, and of course there would have been a lot of people from a lot of places that had suffered with US intervention. And Moises has returned to Madrid, unfortunately, couldn't be here today. And as I think an 11-year-old saw the bombing of the palace from his balcony during the US-backed coup, and had the misfortune then had to move to Australia and run into all the racism we muster for immigrants there. So, but it was quite a special evening, people from Ecuador and Argentina and Chile. I think it's always necessary. I'm going to reflect a bit on Oceania. And before that, to my original story, I was very depressed after, of course, watching the tomahawk chop on the Atlanta Braves and what the whole indigenous culture had been trivialised and commercialised too. But I actually called the Washington DC Catholic Worker that night and discovered that a number of friends had been arrested, and they'd been arrested on top of the statue of Columbus and the Columbus Circle in the district of Columbus in Washington, after pouring blood over the statue and writing 500 years of genocide. At that time they were surrounded by over 1,000 Knights of Columbus, and the funny part of the story is they hadn't checked that the Knights of Columbus were one of our main funders for that hospitality house. So I guess there's always a bit of a price speaking truth to power, even to the Knights. It just seems to be a theme that in the very early stages of the war machine, it's indigenous people who suffer in the preparation for war and nuclear testing, etc. John Pilger, of course, last week did a great documentary on Diego Garcia, which was totally ethnically cleansed of 2,000 indigenous people. The US military leased it or bought it off Britain, and all the people, first they killed everyone's pet dog, you know, the final solution for dogs, and then they sent them hundreds and hundreds, maybe over 1,000 miles, first detained them in the Seychelles and sent them to Mauritius, where they've been living in dire poverty and all the consequences of that in terms of addiction and prostitution, etc. This is a very common story to the Pacific as well. Much of the nuclear testing in the 50s and 60s happened on atolls where indigenous people had a very sensitive relationship to the land and the water. Nuclear testing by both the French and the Americans caused incredible birth deformities and cancers and leukemias. And, of course, polluted their own troops as well. There's a whole nuclear veterans association in the United States that a lot of their membership are dying very, very young. In Australia, this is the same situation where the uranium is produced means that people are driven off their tribal lands, whether that be at Roxby Downs in South Australia or the Ranger Mine up in the Northern Territory. So it's those people who suffer. So whether it's indigenous culture or those Chileans and Argentinians and who were dropped out of helicopters into the sea for offering dissent to the American agenda in their countries, or whether it's the Venezuelans who are now threatened, and of course the Cubans who are permanently threatened. I remember all those people today. We might just end with a moment of silence for all the victims of the Imperial Project.
Special criminal court,
right.
Which is pretty special. Pretty special. there's a legend, whether it's funny true or not, but there's a chap called Billy the Bull who was born without legs. I think, was it, Robbie, any idea, was it early 19th century or something? And he committed a couple of murders anyway. There was a special bull they built for him and stuff, so he used to waddle out of the tenements and kill people and rob them and stuff. Jeez. But he actually ended up in a dungeon there for the rest of his life, 15 or 20 years, I do believe. So we're certainly following in the footsteps of pretty special criminals. It's where most of the real IRA guys are sent down. And ordinary decent criminals, Robert Emmett was also sent down there also, yeah, too. So we're back up in court Friday morning, 10:30 in the forecourts before Judge Hogan in court room number 8. And he is the trial date fixing judge, so we are hoping that the trial date will finally be nailed down. Probably will not be even in the first semester, first legal term of next year. It's quite a high probability according to Irish Council, so it could actually be after Easter of next year. So the wait continues. Also, other activities going on. There's a October 19th, 20th, and I stress the euphemism, there's a less lethal weapons conference going on. And actually, that chap just went by and he talked about Amnesty. A member of Amnesty is actually addressing it. So that's quite ironic, so being co-opted there. So there will be protests there also, and I believe that if people are interested. It's organised by Dublin Grassroots, and I think the Irish Anti-War Movement are doing something as well. It's a couple of different groups doing different things. Our main thing is next Friday we're in court. We'll gather at the Spire at 9:30 and we'll leave it for a while, and then we'll do a single file peace vigil down and maintain a vigil outside and go inside then and to the cattle mart and see what happens. Also
half
on
nine.
Monday, 9:30, yeah. On Monday next, we will be at the Aviation Authority building on Burgh Quay between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. The Irish Aviation Authority allows US military planes to go through. On October 31st, we will be returning to Shannon. Well, we won't because we're married, but friends of ours will. And that will be a theatrical tie-in, and Carmen Trotta, who's a US anti-war activist, will be over and he will be speaking and addressing the crowd there. I believe he has a brother who's a doctor who's serving in the US military. So there's a couple of events anyway that are actually on the leaflets and stuff, and you're very welcome to attend all of them. And of course Mary Kelly, who did a similar action to ours 5 days previous in January 2003, is back on trial, I think, for the third time. That begins Tuesday week, and we'll be doing a solidarity vigil outside the door at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for her.
Aviation.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Well done.
Thanks, everyone.
Nice to see everyone.
Very good.
My pleasure.